It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
This is the smell of the leftover tuna fish sandwich you left in your lunchbox over the weekend in a wimpy trash bag.
Wimpy, wimpy, wimpy!
Blech! And this is the smell of that same sandwich in a hefty, ultra-strong trash bag.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Ah, smell the difference? Hefty Ultra Strong has Arm & Hammer with continuous odor control, so no matter what's inside your trash, you can stay one step ahead of stinky. And for bigger jobs, try the superior strength of Hefty Large Black Bags.
Today's episode is brought to you by the folks over at SeatGeek, the best and easiest to use ticket platform out there. They take the confusion out of buying tickets using a 0 to 10 scoring system and a green is good, red is bad color rating system so you and your loved ones get the best deal possible. So whether it's going to see our beloved Red Legs at Great American Ballpark, the Bengals over at Paycor, FC Cincinnati, one of the area college teams, or pretty much anything in between, use promo code RIVERFRONT at checkout and receive $20 off your first order. Click the link in the show notes to download the app and get started. That's Riverfront, one word, for $20 off.
What is up, everybody? Happy holidays. This is the Bengals Show presented by the Riverfront. I'm your host, Joe Farsing. Alongside me, I always get the error right. Alongside me is my best friend, Greg Neiman. Greg, what is going on? How was your Christmas, buddy?
Living the dream. Christmas was good. No disaster. So it was all good. You know, family, food. It was good. So how was yours?
Good. Nobody went to the emergency room and nobody got taken off of any family group chats for bringing up politics at the dinner table. So.
Yeah, no news ready. Is good news after the holidays.
Absolutely. Just ready for all the Christmas crap to come down, ready for the new year, and ready to... I'm going to say I'm ready for the Bengals season to be over, but I'm ready for the Bengals, like... And we'll get into here. This has been a weird Bengals season, and I wanted to make the playoffs. I don't know what they can do if they make the playoffs, and again, we'll get into game review and game preview here in just a minute here, but... Ready to flip the page and start a new year. This last year wasn't bad, but...
I'm ready for this team to be defined or, like, get the answer. You know what I mean? Kind of how it feels, and there's been a million different answers this season, so it's just been kind of crazy, like you said.
And there's still a lot of unanswered questions out there as well, so...
Yeah, for sure.
If you guys are watching on YouTube, again, like and subscribe. If you guys listen on the audio feed, please go to youtube.com/RiverfrontCincy. Give us 5-star ratings and all that fun crap on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts. I don't know all the things. I should know all the spots where they are. I post them all, but I don't pay attention to that. We do have a special guest with us this week. You guys know him from a long time, or old heads like me would know him from Two Angry Guys with Tom Gamble. He is on Local 12 News, Richard Skinner. Richard Skinny, welcome.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Appreciate it. Looking forward to it here. We'll jump into it real quickly here. What the hell happened on Sunday? Bengals were smothered 34-11. Are they just a terrible matchup for the Steelers?
Yeah, I think in a goofy, perfect storm way. I mean, it felt like Pittsburgh was completely backs against the wall. All the George Pickens stuff that was going on, that was a negative. But I think it's a case of don't count Mike Tomlin out. It was a kind of standalone game, so guys knew that everybody's watching. I think it was kind of the perfect storm. I think there's the natural letdown, right or wrong, that, it's only Mason Rudolph, and it's not going to be much of a challenge. And I think all those things. It was funny, about 15 minutes before kickoff, there seemed like there were a lot of empty seats. And I thought, okay, well, maybe it's, you know, they've given up on the team a little bit. It's some kind of a miserable, dreary day. boy, by kickoff time, the place was packed. It was rocking. I think they got some juice from the fans as well. And there is one thing to be told. When you fall behind the Steelers, you're done. Not many teams have done it this year because Steelers don't outgain anybody other than the Bengals. But if you fall behind them, and especially when this team falls behind them, they're just done, right or wrong.
Yeah, I think when you fall behind and you let their pass rushers get going, I mean, it's just the recipe for a total disaster. And the Bengals seem to cook it up in a way that nobody else does. I mean, it really is just the perfect matchup. They can never get that lead and play from where they want to play from. And it ends up backfiring every time. And well, I mean, we've seen the results time and time again.
Yeah, and I mean, the Bengals unfortunately had to face them both times without Joe Burrow. First time was Jake Browning's first week. They didn't know really what was going to work with the offense. I mean, I still have my questions over the play calling and everything on, or, you know, at least the execution of the play calling on the first week. But Jake Browning was playing Santa Claus, just giving away presents to all the Steelers and all the Steelers fans out there. We'll get on the Bengals on defense first off, though. Mason G.D. Rudolph, 17-27, 290 yards, 10.74 yards an attempt, which is absolutely ridiculous. I didn't even think he looked that great, but the receivers were running routes on air all game long, especially George Pickens.
Yeah, three completions to George Pickens go for 196 yards. Actually, his fourth catch went for negative yards. So, you know, they had almost half their offense on those three completions. And, you know, the one is a simple slant that gets screwed up by Dax Hill taking a bad angle and knocking, and DJ Turner, for starters, not getting his hands on him and trying to reroute him. And then Chidobe Awuzie, and I feel so bad for him because he was playing so well before the knee injury. And he just is not even close to what he was. And twice he has man coverage on Pickens, and twice Pickens runs right by him. One where he admitted he got greedy and thought he was going to jump around at the sticks and didn't. Pickens ran right by him. But you can't have that. I mean, a veteran cornerback can't let a ball go over his head in those circumstances. And I think it just shows, unfortunately for Cheeto, not an excuse, he just is not back to what he was before he got that knee injury.
Yeah. And watching the game, when you saw the first Pickens slant, you saw that catch and it ended in a touchdown. It literally, I had the same feeling as I do every Pittsburgh game by the end of the game. It was just like, really? Like, and I had that feeling that early, and it just, that feeling never changed from start to finish in the entire game.
Worst possible scenario.
Yeah.
Yeah, worst 100%. Possible scenario, that touchdown. Yeah.
Well, the week before, we talked about slow Pickens down early. If you can slow Pickens down for maybe a quarter and a half, Pickens is going to play it. You know, all the saga was going on. He's going to play his way out of, he's not going to want to be there. And what do? We go, here you go. Here's the ultimate prize. Now you're going to play really hard all game. And it was just, I mean, it just felt, it was the most deflating, as deflating of a touchdown as you can give up, in my opinion.
Yeah. And I really think that's a game that if Cam Taylor-Britt were healthy, like if he had been injured a week before and was eligible to come off, not even his coverage ability, just his ability to get in guys' heads. I mean, you saw what happened to Metcalf. Metcalf still had a decent game statistically, but he can get guys, he can screw with guys, and someone who's volatile and can mentally check out, like, that's the game for him, and he wouldn't have blown the coverage. I don't know whether to have the Cheeto discussion, but he's free agent after this year. Did they even look at bringing him back as a reserve? Because I mean, going forward, even before, you know, even before Cam Taylor-Britt got healthy, it was DJ Turner and CTB as the starters. Did we bring him, like, the Bengals even look at bringing him back? Or is it, I mean, he had the back injury as well, which doesn't help when you're trying to rehab from a knee injury, but
I think you let him test the market, see if there is a market for him. I don't think there's going to be a significant market for him. And then if you can get him back on a one-year prove-it deal, as you're right, as a depth piece. And, you know, maybe for him, another year removed from, or at least more time removed from that knee surgery, probably not going to get him back to the Cheeto before the knee injury, but at least gets him back to a capable cornerback and, you know, in a backup role. And I think that's where they went with this whole year. They were rotating him and DJ, and I think it was really primarily to, A, get DJ experience, and B, because Cheeto couldn't take a ton of snaps, and they knew it. And now they had to force the hand because of Cam's injury. And I'll be interested to see on Sunday. I'm going to guess that it'll be DJ and Cam as the outside corners, and Cheeto maybe getting a handful of snaps. I just think the torch has passed. But to your question, yeah, I think you let him test the market, and I'm sure he'll want to test the market too. I just don't know what that market would be for him. I don't think it would be very significant.
I know this is crazy, but I'm going to say it. I think it all comes down to money. I think if you get him on the right deal, you know, if he's willing to come back for that 1 year, you know, deal on a prove it deal, it makes perfect sense for both sides, in my opinion. But of course, it comes down to numbers. He's got to be willing to, you know, come to a certain number that I would think is not very high. I just don't see this as a high dollar deal. So if the numbers work out, of course, you know, it can all work in the end. But amazing to me, it all comes down to money. Shocker, I know.
I never would have thought. I thought loyalty was the only thing that mattered in sports. It's going to be interesting. And, you know, this is looking too far forward. Season isn't over yet, so we don't really need to look too much into free agency in the draft. But the Bengals are going to be set at, you know, starting cornerback. Or, you know, or at least the outside corners. Hilton is a question mark. He's a free agent. He has looked his age at times, and then he's looked like vintage Mike Hilton coming off the edge and taking down linebacker running backs that are 40 pounds heavier than he is. I think they definitely would try to keep him around. Jalen Davis is his backup, and he really hasn't gotten a whole lot of run. They really like him, but he had one snap on Sunday or Saturday. God, this week is totally screwed up. Are your guys' internal clocks messed? I mean, having the games on Saturday, Christmas on a Monday, it's Friday already, and I have no idea what day tomorrow is supposed to be.
No, I thought yesterday all day was Wednesday until I realized it was Thursday. I mean, I'm serious. Starting with that Monday night game in Jacksonville, for me, it has been a whirlwind. It feels like you came out of that Monday night game, and boom, here's a short week, and then there's another short week, and then the holiday, and yeah. Oh yeah, there's a team I have to cover in the middle of this holiday. Oh wait a minute, oh, they are playing on a Sunday for a change, but then. Oh yeah, great. That's on New Year's Eve, so it's been weird.
I just found out it was Friday when you said that, Joe. So thank you. I thought today was Thursday. I don't know. Well, Saturday maybe because Kentucky's playing in a bowl game. I don't know what's going on, but I'm glad it's Friday.
I mean, daytime football on a Thursday afternoon. We were out and about and watching the game at like 3 o'clock. Like it's just I like my Sunday games at 1 o'clock. I wish. That's the one good thing when the Bengals were irrelevant. They would play 14, 15 games at 1 o'clock on a Sunday. And the only games that weren't were West Coast game. You know, they weren't getting any prime time. They weren't getting Jim Nance and Tony Romo, which was another positive. But again, you look going back to the Bengals on defense, three catches by Pickens for 196 yards, not counting the one for -1 yard. They had 94 yards passing on 14 other completions. I don't understand how you can pick up that few yards. I mean, no one else had more than 36 yards receiving. It's almost like they just had those three absolute meltdowns, and the rest of the time, like, they did a good job. I don't know how to explain it. It was really weird.
Well, I think that's been kind of the theme of the defense all year. It's been a wind back run that you've got it bottled up on one side, and the guy spits out the other way for 25 yards. It's given up big plays in the passing game. It's explosive plays, and you know, talking to Lou Anarumo this week, you could sense his frustration because you know primarily it's the same group of guys back. And I know we can pin it on well, you know, you lost two key safeties, and I'll give you that part of it. But again, the rest of the guys who are primarily there stopping the run have stopped the run before. And they're not doing it this year. And, you know, maybe DJ Reader did take a step back. You know, maybe Logan Wilson and Jermaine Pratt took steps back. And that's always possible. Nothing's ever the same. But it has been a weird year of giving up explosive plays. You know, you look at even Minnesota. Ty Chandler runs for whatever it was, 130-some-odd yards. And I think he had 60 of those on three runs. And for the most part, otherwise, he averaged like 3.2 a pop. You're going to take that, but you can't keep giving up the explosives because they just eat you alive.
And the worst part is, as a coach, I mean, you watch the film and you're looking at the plays and you're saying, you know, 97% of the plays were great. The problem is you don't know when the 3% is going to happen. So, and when it continually happens to you, unfortunately, that is what you are.
I mean, especially we're now coming up on game 16. I think you're right. That you are what you are. That's the unfortunate part to it. You know, maybe those explosives don't happen if it isn't Cheeto and it is, as you mentioned, Cam Taylor Britt, but it wasn't. So, you know, those plays happened and, you know, two went straight for touchdowns and another one set up a field goal. That's 17 points right off of those three plays alone. And that was enough to beat you in this game. And so, yeah, that's the unfortunate part. I guess the thing is you got two games to rectify it and maybe they do. Maybe they slow the big plays down in these last two games and that helps them get wins.
Yeah, I was surprised to see that the Steelers only averaged 3.8 yards per carry. It seemed like they were just picking up chunks. They found Zach Carter time and time and again. This is, you know, bigger question. I had high hopes for Zach Carter coming into the season. I thought he was going to make a big splash at backing up BJ Hill. I mean, he was an edge rusher. They had him put on weight, so obviously last year was going to be a bit of a red shirt. I thought he was going to be able to kind of be the double up like to how BJ and Larry Ogunjobi were 2 years ago. He's been a disappointment, and it seemed like they played him a lot more last week, especially in run downs, when he hasn't been able to hold up and run all year long. Outside, actually, I will give him credit against Minnesota on the fourth down run. He was the low man, and he blew that play up. He blew the center right into Mullins, and he couldn't get any forward momentum. But I don't want to put everything on one guy. It's more of they were a bad run defense with DJ Reader, and you lose your best run defender, and it's not going to get better. But I was really surprised that it was only 3.8 yards a carry. I guess they were just more efficient than anything else. When they needed 3 yards, they'd get four. When they needed 2 yards, they'd get three.
Yeah, exactly. And to your point about Zach Carter, I mean, when we saw him for the first time in the offseason, those of us that cover the team, I mean, he looked noticeably bigger. And it was like, okay, this is a guy who's going to be a three technique. He's going to fill that rotational role, to your point of Larry. And that's exactly what it felt like. He's going to be the BJ Hill to BJ Hill being Larry Ogunjobi or vice versa. And it just hasn't come to fruition. I mean, if you go back and relook at the tape or look at the Minnesota game, there were just a couple of times where he got turned totally out of the hole by a blocker. I mean, almost to the point where you don't have to know anything about football to go, boy, look at that guy getting moved. And I do wonder, to your point, I thought we'd see more Jay Tufele against Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And maybe it was the two plays that Zach made at the end of that game. Maybe if you're Lou Anarumo or Marion Hobby, the defensive line coach, you go, okay, that's what he's capable of doing. That's maybe a confidence boost for him, and let's get him more snaps. Well, wasn't very effective in those snaps, and whether we like it or not, he's still going to have to be a big part of what they're doing on defense, even if it's a rotational piece. And he's got to step up this week because Kansas City can run the football a little bit. So, yeah, to your point, he's one guy, and I guess it comes down to they tried to fit a round peg into a square hole. I mean, yeah. They tried to turn a college defensive end into a three technique. They thought he was kind of that tweener size, that he wasn't dynamic off the edge, but you can bulk him up a little bit. He's going to have good quickness inside, and he just gets pushed around.
And you have to love the Bengals' thought process, you know, putting an edge rusher on the inside. He's big enough. I mean, it all makes sense on paper. But going back to the run game, the run game to me felt efficient because the pass game was efficient. It'd be one thing if you were able to limit the Steelers' pass game and make the Steelers look like what they've looked like all year throwing the football. But when you allow them to throw the football and then you add in the 3.8 a carry, it felt much more efficient than I think it really was. But that's because you were just getting hit from all angles. I thought, you know, the defense didn't really put up any roadblocks to whatever they wanted to do. So it just felt way more efficient on the ground. Because I agree, it felt like they were chunking you, but they really weren't. It was just when the pass game added on to it, it was too much to handle.
Yeah, but when they needed to get pushed, they got pushed. When they needed to move a pile, they moved a pile. And to your point, it wasn't always for big 25-yard gains. It was, you're right, when you needed three, you got four. When you needed four, you got five. When you needed two, you got three. I mean, and the pile would move. And so, yeah, I think it was more efficient than it was just eye-popping. Because I was with you when I was going through the stats after the game. I looked down and went, wow, that's all they wound up with? And that's all I guess that's right. But it just felt like when they wanted to move the line of scrimmage, they moved the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, their longest run of the game was only 13 yards. I mean, that's Joe Mixon's longest carry of the game, too. Going back to Zach Carter, it's almost like he put in weight from the waist up, but he doesn't have the strength and the anchor from the waist down to be able to hold up. You know, someone's going to lean on him and just and move him right out of the way. Maybe that's more to, you know, something that he can work and build on next week or next year, next offseason. I was kind of surprised that they didn't. Dominique Davis, who looked fantastic in preseason. Again, you're playing against backups, but they activated him. Actually signed him to the regular 53 for a week. He didn't get any snaps at all. He's got the similar build to DJ Reader. He's 6'2", 6'3", that 335 pounds. And at least someone who's at least big enough that can occupy the center without just getting absolutely scraped out of the way like a shovel. He's he the cut him and brought him back to the practice squad. So I wonder if he's going to be, if they'll reactivate him. Chiefs haven't been able to run the ball well. So you wonder how, you know, how they're going to actually, who's going to be active in terms of having more pass rushers, more, you know, whatever, but kind of wish they would have given him a little bit of runs to see what he could do at this late in the game. I mean, you need to try guys out. So running the same guys out there that haven't done much, Jay Tufele, Josh Tupou, I don't know what that's going to give you.
Yeah, I like Dominic Davis was kind of my most disappointing cut from camp. I get it. I mean, the numbers weren't there because of Josh Tupou, because of Tufele, you know, because of Zach Carter. So I understood that. And you were always going to be able to get him back on a practice squad, even though he put some really good stuff on tape in preseason. But you're right. I mean, that's always the gauge, right? It's against the backups. Well, and it was dominant at times against those backups. So let's see what he can do against the big boys. I'm kind of with you there.
I just always think to myself in the preseason, I mean, there's only so many players in the NFL. The guys that play in the preseason are still really good.
Yeah.
So when you're playing well against these guys, I know we all think backups, but these guys can play football. I mean, you're talking about all SEC, all Big Ten kind of guys. And I agree. I mean, I think last week would have been a perfect time to get some snaps because it didn't matter either way. So why not see a couple?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, you've seen what the guys can do. I mean, I guess Tupou is an okay rotation player. I mean, he's made some plays over the years. Tufele, I think he had one game last year where he flashed, and then he's just kind of been a dude the rest of the time. But again, love to see. And again, not that the season's over, but you don't have anything else. It's not like you're replacing a stud. Let someone who showed something, put something on film, let him run out there against the guys. So, quick recap of the Bengals offense. Again, Jake Browning faced Rudolph, the red-nosed reindeer, but Jake Browning was the one who played Santa, giving the gifts to the Yinzers left and right. I know he said the throw in the end zone. He was trying to, he was just trying to throw it out of bounds. And I think I believe him. What are you guys, where are you on that? The one that he threw into four guys, there was no Bengal around. He had to be throwing that away, right? And just screwed up the throw.
Yeah, he should have thrown it sideways out of bounds.
Yeah.
He was trying to throw it out of the back of the end zone. In fact, he even said after he threw it, he thought he had enough on it that he didn't even realize he was intercepted until he heard the crowd reaction to it.
Yeah.
He thought he got it clearly out. It wasn't even close. It was 3 to 5 yards deep, maybe at the best.
Yeah.
I think that's the live and learn of. I get, you know, a lot of times out in the red zone, you're just going to sling it into the stands and all those things out of the back. But he was kind of just flipped it. If you're going to flip it, You're already out of pocket. There's no grounding situation. Just throw it sideways out of bounds. And that's an unfortunate live and learn because that was a momentum killer a little bit too, because they score quickly. You put together a good drive. You were almost guaranteed 3 points where you were. And that would have at least been some kind of an answer. But that felt so deflating that because it was nothing that Pittsburgh had to do other than catch the football. There was nobody else around besides Patrick Peterson. So yeah, that one was weird. I do believe him. I clearly believe him because I just think he thought he got enough on it and he didn't even come close to doing it.
I believe him. The problem I have is I feel like you throw it out of the back of the end zone when you're in the pocket and you're worried about intentional grounding. You know, the red zone is the one time you could throw it through the back of the end zone. And you're safe. You get a free intentional grounding, essentially. I don't know why you don't throw it in the third row of the stands. I really don't. It doesn't make sense to me. I don't know the back of the end zone situation. I mean, there should have been a chain guy that just got drilled with a football.
Yes.
I mean, other than that, I live and learn, but my goodness, sometimes when somebody says the stove's hot, just say yes. You don't have to put your hand on it. I that was such a bad mistake. I mean, it did hurt. I get it. He's going to live and learn, but that one was tough. I mean, you just, I could have thrown it out of bounds. So there's just so much.
I don't need much skill on that rollout. Throw it about 4 yards forward out of bounds sideways. It doesn't take a whole lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. You glance over, you find the line of scrimmage marker and just flip it underhand. Like, who cares? You know, like, you don't have to make it look fancy. He doesn't. I mean, we know he doesn't exactly have a strong arm, so why are you trying to chuck it? I don't know. The more concerning plays are the interceptions that he keeps throwing to. It's just bad decisions more than anything else. That was a brain fart. The ones that are more concerning, he seems to struggle to see linebackers dropping into passing lanes. He threw another interception like that this past week. I mean, he had three total, but those are ones that obviously he's going to, you know, when they go back on Monday and study the film, he's going to see those, but those are ones that he's seen in high school, seen a linebacker drop it in the coverage. Those are the ones that make, you know, there was all the talk that, you know, all someone's going to try to trade for him. They're going to trade a high value pick for him in the offseason for the Bengals. Like, no, these are mistakes that you can't have a starting quarterback. You're not going to give up assets for a quarterback who struggles to recognize dropping linebackers in throwing lanes.
Yeah, I'm actually, I don't disagree with that, but I'm giving him a little bit of a pass for the third one. The second was, I mean, in clear coverage. I mean, there's two guys underneath and two guys behind. There's really nowhere for that ball to go. The third one, I'll be honest, at the snap, I had my binoculars on, and I saw Highsmith had his hand in the dirt, and I'm just kind of watching the tackle. I was like, boy, him and Watt coming off the edge are just going to kill this kid. Next thing I know, I saw the pass, and I look up, and I went, oh, my God, that's Highsmith downfield making that pick. I thought that was just a really good play on his part. You got to see it. You're right. You got to recognize it. But I thought the kid made just a great athletic play, to be honest with you. The second one, I can't give any excuse for the second one.
Yeah. Well, go ahead, Greg.
No, you're good. Go ahead,
Joe. In that whole drive where he threw the one to Highsmith, that drive just got taken completely off the rails by Jonah Williams.
Yeah.
Had holding on first down and then false start the very next snap. And then two plays later, Highsmith, that's good job disguising coverages and an edge rusher dropping in. So, yeah, I do agree with you. I'll give him a little bit of a pass there. I mean, Steelers have always have fantastic edge rushers and linebacker play, and someone just making a great play. So I'll give him a pass on that one.
But back to your point, Joe, back to your point though too. And again, so I am giving him a pass for that one. The second one I can't, but it's been at least one in all the games. I like Jake a lot. I think Jake has proven now that you've got a capable backup quarterback on your hands. But it feels like it's been every game there's one. The funny part is these other games, he's bounced back in just historic, heroic ways from the interceptions. And, you know, the one against Minnesota is like, okay, that's it, ball game over. And then comes the fourth quarter where he rises up and throws for all those yards and they come back and get the victory. So, great quarterbacks, Joe Burrow's going to get picked 10 to 12 times in a season. Jake Browning's on pace, if he was going to play a whole season, get picked, 15 to 20 times. You can't have that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, completely agree.
T Higgins picked a good game to pick his game up. Five catches, 140 yards. Did have that 80-yard catch and catch and run touchdown. Where do you and I'll ask you, since you're on the team, have you seen? I mean, I can't think of anybody that's had this much of a roller coaster season for the Bengals in a long time. I mean, came into the season with so much hope, and then there's disappointment that he didn't get the extension done before the season. It's just been up and down, kind of brain cramp drops. He missed a few games. I mean, there's legitimate concern about his durability, and it has to be an absolutely frustrating for him. Because I mean, the guy's a great guy. He busts his ass. So I'm not going to say it's a matter of effort, but is it in his head? I mean, Jesse Bates talked about it, and they share an agent. So that's always been my question. Jesse Bates admitted that him not getting an extension going into his fourth year was bothering him and was in his head. And he kind of attributed his kind of roller coaster or his subpar play to that. Do you think that that's part of it? Or is it just something else?
T says it's not. I'm not sure I believe him. I'm not sure. I thought it was great, to your point, when Jesse came out a couple years ago and said that. I thought it was a great moment of honesty, right? I mean, because he wasn't playing well at the time. And then when he said it was almost like, I can't remember if it was a bye week, but it was about midway point of that season when he said it. And from that point forward, he balled out through the playoffs and, unfortunately got tagged. But I think at that point, he understood how the game was going to be played. And to his credit, played great in the tag year. And now look at him. He's going to maybe be an all-pro this year.
Deserves it. In Atlanta. And absolutely.
And I do think there was something that for T. I think also the injury situation probably – factored into some of that too, but you're right. The drops were like, that's not you. That's not him. I mean, receivers are going to drop some. He dropped a lot. He dropped a lot of one wide open ones. And go back to the Minnesota game. The first pass thrown his way in the Minnesota game, he dropped. And then maybe at that point, he just said to hell with it, because from that point forward, the rest of that Minnesota game and the Pittsburgh game, that dude is balled out. I mean, the incredible catch to tie the score against Minnesota, had another fourth quarter touchdown, had the catch and run in this game. I don't think of him as a burner, but he ran away from people in that 80-yard catch against Pittsburgh. And so I whether he says it or not, I do think it has affected him without question. And I get it. I mean, if Joe Burrow hadn't signed the guarantee and maybe this contract discussion had gone long-term and suddenly Joe's injury pops up like it does, where do those contract talks go? I think they go somewhere, but I don't know if they go to where they eventually went to. And so for T, I think you do play trying not to get hurt, right? And it's in your head of, I got to catch this ball because if I don't, it's going to cost me money. I get all those things. So I do think, to your point, I think it absolutely had to be a factor for him.
In no way, I want to be clear on this. In no way do I blame T. Higgins. I think every single person in America, if I told you next year, you may not have a job, you're to say that it doesn't bother you and you're going to do that's insanity. It's going to bother you. I think T's given his absolute best effort. I don't think he's let it affect the way he tries to play. But as a person, it is going to affect you for sure. So, but I think I don't think he's been a problem with the contract. I think he's doing everything he can, but these are real people. I mean,
and to your point, Greg, I mean, you're an injury away from a catastrophic injury away from not getting paid, to where if it's not, you've got generational wealth coming. That would play on my mind. I mean, on a crossing route, am I more worried about catching it or am I worried about getting blown up and costing me the rest of my career when I'm on the verge of a big payday? That's just a human response.
And unfortunately, you're talking about T. Higgins, who's been involved in situations where we've seen crazy things happen. So it's not like this is – I mean, he literally had to deal with that. So, you know, to say it's not on his mind, I mean, these things are – these are real situations. Yes. I mean, this is real life. Like, this is not a story. And I want to be very clear that in no way do I blame T. Higgins, or I'm not saying anything bad, but yes, when you don't know what your job is next year, it's going to affect people.
Yeah. And by no means am I going to say, like, I'm all for these players trying to go out and get every single penny, like, especially in football, you've got such a short window of your career to make as much money as possible. They're not guaranteed, which is absolutely that. It's still asinine to me that in a sport as violent as football, they haven't been able to have guaranteed contracts. I get that owners don't want that because guys get hurt and then you're out all that money, but that's the risk that it still floors me to this day. But, his agent is, and I always pronounce his name, Mulligetta or Mulligetta?
David Mulligetta, yes.
Mulligetta, okay. You wonder if he's starting to get it. I mean, he gets his guys paid. I mean, Jesse Bates got a hell of a nice contract, but at what point, I don't know. I don't think, ultimately, he gets his guys paid, so he's not going to lose any not going to lose any clients, but it kind of sets a bad, or it's got to put him in a bad light, kind of like how everyone looks at Scott Boras in baseball, that when, you know, if you're a team's front office and someone's represented by Mulligetta, you know that guy's going to free agency. You're not going to be able to extend him long term. I don't know if, you know, I'm not in on these contract negotiations. And again, these players should get every damn penny, unless your name's Deshaun Watson. You should get every penny get.
Yeah, I think for him especially, and I don't consider him a number one. I'll give you a 1A maybe. I think he's a perfect number two and a great number two. And we saw this with Marvin Jones, right? Marvin Jones wanted to get paid like a one. Detroit was willing to pay him like a one. So off he went. I think that's for T. I think he wants to be paid like a one, and it's just not going to happen here. And God knows where the market's going to go for wide receivers when the Justin Jefferson contract is signed. And you know, you obviously have to extend Jamar. It's just it's the fact of this world. It feels like, you know, we've always talked about, you know, quarterbacks on rookie contract and the window there. I think we're going to get to the point of wide receivers on rookie contracts, and then you cycle back through again. If you got three great ones, maybe you find a way to keep the number one of ones. And in this case, we know who that is in Jamar Chase. And unfortunately, you just look at T. Higgins and go, I don't even know if they can I thought all along it was going to be a franchise tag situation for him. But I do think when the Jefferson contract signed, that ship might sail too, because it may be too high to do that for T. Higgins as well.
Now, because they're going to have to make the decision on his franchise tag probably before Jefferson's gets signed.
Yeah, right.
I've thought that you know, as the season went forward and it wasn't a contract sign, they're going to tag him and then look to trade him. I mean, obviously, Duke has said, you know, I'm not here to make other teams better, but at some point, if someone's going to give you a high second round pick for that guy, you have to you have to look, you know, that's, instead of paying him, it's going to be what, $20 million, probably close easily. To $20 million to tag him.
Yeah, easily. That's the thing. To your point, I that sounded like the logical conclusion all along. Yeah. They couldn't come to negotiation here. They couldn't come to the extension terms here. Okay, play through this year, tag him, maybe even tag him and keep him and play him like you let Jesse play and then let him walk after that. Or to the point of, all right, we're going to tag him, and boy, this team is offering us great value to trade him. Then that seemed logical. There's a part of me that still thinks that's in play, that I just don't know if you let him just clearly walk and get you'll get a compensatory pick.
Right.
But not get any compensation really in return for that, for a guy of that kind of value.
Yeah, I think the wide receivers room is going to look a lot different next year anyway. I mean, Tyler Boyd's on the last year of his deal. I don't think there's any chance. He's still going to be able to get a decent deal. Maybe a couple-year deal. It's not going to be, obviously, what he signed a few years ago with the Bengals. But does that make you want to keep him around to have more continuity? Because you're not sure who your slot receiver is going to be. Or do you just, I don't say blow it up, but I mean, you drafted two guys last season to fill spots, and are you just going to not give them the spots, but I mean, go in assuming that it's Yoshivas's job to lose for the other outside receiver and Charlie Jones on the inside. So it's interesting to see what they're going to do.
For sure. And I think the disappointing part was the Charlie Jones injury probably kept him from, elevating to get snaps. There's also, from those I've talked to, he still is having a hard time understanding, where to sit down in zones, when to slide in zones. And it sounds simple, right? Well, it's not. I mean, Tyler Boyd has a nuance of doing that. And Charlie Jones, again, that's you didn't draft him for this year. You drafted him as a potential replacement. But a potential replacement may be as soon as next year. So you hope that he's closer to hitting the ground running when next season starts.
The one thing you said, Skinner, that really pops off to me is we start talking about the wide receiver rookie deal, and it feels like you have to kind of pass on to the next one. And I think I completely agree. I think it's actually happening. I think this is it. And I think the difference is when you have quarterback on a rookie deal versus you don't. I think you got to choose one wide receiver once you get into that quarterback deal. And you have to choose one, and you have to continue to cycle the other ones on rookie deals because you just can't afford it. And the situation that rings so true in my head right now is just go look at Kansas City, and they'll tell you about when you hit the midst of a quarterback deal, and they have contract problems all over the place and no receivers. So I think Cincinnati is right in the midst of, they need to kind of refresh another wide receiver rookie deal where you're basically stealing money in the cap because you're not paying a guy. And if they do that, please listen up, Malik Nabers from LSU. That's all I'm saying.
I would sign up for that. I don't think he will be there by the time the Bengals draft in round one, but that would be nice if he was. And I would tell you the one good thing is, and I think we see this across the league, it used to be when you were a fantasy football owner of finding that third year wide receiver, that was when the bump came for whatever reason. Yeah. Guys just kind of came in their own anymore. These high level draft picks, high round, they're ready to go right away. They jump in and play and produce. And so I guess that's the one positive to it is you can plug and play a high round pick at that position.
Well, I mean, look at Jordan Addison in Minnesota, and people are like, yeah, he's having an okay year. Like what? I mean, this kid, are you kidding me? I mean, he's a rookie.
His numbers are great.
Are you kidding me? This is an okay year for a rookie. I mean, that's the standard now. I completely agree. I just think first year guys are expected to be dudes now, simply put.
And I think it helps, especially if they're able to keep Troy Walters. They trust the wide receiver coach and their scouting. I mean, look at they haven't drafted a ton of wide receivers over the past 5, 6, 7 years. I mean, Tyler Boyd in the second round pick, obviously that was a hit. He was never a legit number one dude, but fantastic complimentary piece. T. Higgins, same, round two, same draft as Joe Burrow. I mean, that goes down as one of the great drafts and probably the best draft in Bengals history, probably one of the best drafts in NFL history when it comes, after all is said and done, and then hitting Jamar in round one. So trust they can trust their scouting and their staff on that. I mean, Yosevash has looked ready. I mean, they thought he was a project, and he's looked ready to go since the jump, and he's done nothing but make plays and be a, I don't want to say a finished product, but I mean, he looks a hell of a lot closer to being ready to be a legit impact player than anyone would have thought that he was going to be coming out of a Ivy League school this year.
Yeah, and I'll go back to for whatever reason they've missed on a lot of position groups, but wide receiver is not one of them. Yep. Go back to the AJ Green, Marvin Jones, Mohamed Sanu trio of receivers, right? Yep. And they cycle back through when they started with the T draft and I like or the Tyler Boyd draft rather. Like I said, any more of these wide receivers come out of college, that's the one. But while we can't gauge any of these offensive linemen that come out of college anymore, I don't care what we think of them. It's just so hard to project these guys any longer. Wide receiver though, you can project a lot of guys these days.
Except for John Ross when Kansas City picks. Now, granted, he got screwed because Marvin buried him, but yes, again, when you look at the very next pick, Patrick flipping Mahomes, but that's, you know.
Even with the John Ross pick, you do have to give the Bengals credit on wide receiver positionally. I mean, they've been not just singles hitters. I mean, they've been home run hitters when they've gone wide receiver.
I looked through a few months ago. I looked through the entire history of the Bengals from the very first season on, and there have been, I think, maybe two seasons in their entire 56 season. How many? 68. So 56 seasons. I think there's been. So there's been two seasons where they haven't had a wide receiver that on their roster that made a Pro Bowl as a Cincinnati Bengal. So they, even Paul Brown days all the way forward, they can pick receivers. So we'll give them credit there. I did skip over this and meant to ask, what was Jake Browning doing on the Yosivas catch? No catch. They ran to the line and then he's checking and like I'm screaming at my TV, snap the flipping ball, just take a knee, just spike it. I don't care.
Zach fell on that story. Yeah. He said he told him in the headset to get out of the play. I don't know if I buy that.
I don't.
I think it should have been screaming the opposite of running. Teams have automatics in that circumstance. The automatic might just be turning hands to the running back or sneak forward just to get the snap off, because that was a big overturn, to be honest with you. So, yeah, I'm going to have to take Zach at his word here, I guess, because he's the one that took the blame for this. But I'm not so sure that was all Zach. I don't.
At what point are these teams going to figure out when it's clearly, not necessarily clearly not going to go in your favor, but when it's up in the air for something you need to have, I mean, hell, just false start. I don't care what you do.
The snap is more important than anything else at that point.
100, I don't care if you lose 5 yards. I really don't. First and 15 after a monster play is way more important. When are teams going to really figure this out? I mean, I do not care what you do as long as you don't turn the ball over on that play. You just need to snap the ball and make it official.
You were mentioned before, Greg, Kentucky's playing in a bowl game right now. I got it on in the background. First half, Clemson had a play overturned in which they had a guy that looked like he didn't catch it along the sidelines. They ruled it in. Clemson then subs, which allows Kentucky to sub, and they can take their sweet time to sub. And by the time they did, the official said, let's go look at the review. And Clemson had a first down overturned. So to your point, just do the automatic snap the daggone thing.
Just spike the damn thing like it's trying to kill the clock.
Yeah.
It's one of those that just dozens upon dozens of displays that are just frustrating, and you want to throw something at your TV, and you're like, again, well, good on Zach. I mean, there's a reason players love playing for Zach, and I think he really is a good coach, regardless what you think about play calling. He jumps on those grenades, but...
Yeah, and it's easy to say, this is what they need to do, but you have to coach it. So, you really have to coach the situation. If you don't coach the situation, then how am I to blame Jake Browning when I haven't specifically been told in that situation? So to me, I put it all on the head honcho. I'm not blasting him. I think that's where it lies, and you live and you learn and you move on. But that's where I would place the blame, quote unquote, if it was going somewhere.
Yeah. And the other questionable call for me was 4th and inches from the 5, they threw into the end zone. I mean, they had 2nd down and a yard, and they weren't able to pick up anything outside on the 3rd down carry. They ruled short. They tried to review it, and it looked like he kind of got hosed on the spot. But your thoughts on throwing into the end zone on 4th and inches?
Well, to me, that's kind of what I wrote my column about after the game was that play, I think, defines this year for the Bengals against AFC North teams. They just aren't physical enough. They don't trust their physicality. They get out physicaled. And, we talked to Zach a few weeks ago, and he made a point to us, and he's right. Their goal was to be something different than an AFC North team. All the others are physical. They're going to line up and pound it. They wanted to be a finesse, Joe Burrow in a shotgun, 5 wide or going empty, and we're going to do it differently. And to their credit, it has worked for the most part. But this year, there's no question if they don't make the playoffs, we can point to Joe Burrow's injury and the injury issues early in the year, and that's more than fair. That's that's not an excuse. There's facts involved with that. But 0-5 against the North. I want to throw Tennessee in there because they play a similar brand of football, yeah, which is line up and be physical. So that's 0-6. That's six of your losses against teams that literally just lined up and were tougher than you at the point of attack. And I think the 4th and inches, it came after Joe Mixon got stuffed on 3rd and a yard. He moved it a little bit, yep, to make it more 4th and inches than 4th and a full yard. But at that point, I mean, if you can't move the pile there or don't trust that you can move it there, that tells me all I need to know. And so I think they didn't trust that they could move the pile a 0.5 inch, that they thought they could throw it. And unfortunately, Steelers called a zero coverage blitz. And before Jake Browning could look up and find T. Higgins going to the pylon, a dude's in his face and he has to throw it quickly and it falls incomplete. But I think the storyline of that is they just don't think they're as physical as the other teams in the North. Yeah. And they haven't been this year, and it's come back to bite them in the ass.
So let me ask you this, and a lot's been made this past week. Yeah, they're 0-5 in the division. They're not physical, and I'm fine with them not trying to be this 1980s, 1990s AFC North, AFC Central, just pound the ball tough in the trenches. They were 3-3 to the division last year. In 2021, they cleaned house in the division. You don't need to play that kind of ball. Like I'm fine with them being again. Finesse makes it is almost kind of derogatory, yeah, no, when people use it, but
yeah, that's probably not a fair term. But yeah, that's
just kind of the more open, more wide open. I'm completely fine with that. I don't know, where do you guys stand on that? I mean, there's more than one way to more than one way to win a game, and the teams that win aren't the ground and pound teams when you see at the end of the game. It's efficient quarterback play.
Now, I would tell you, I'd rather line up on 4th and inches and run the football or sneak it forward.
Absolutely.
No, I think to Zach's point, he wanted to do something different. He wanted to build a different team. And the last 2 years, you can't say anything other than it was a huge success doing that. This year, it wasn't. And maybe it is a one-off. And I didn't even think about this till I think Lou Anarumo or Brian Callahan brought it up to us the other day. I think it was Brian. And it's not an excuse. I mean, Joe Burrow in Cleveland was physically compromised in week 1. In week 2 against Baltimore, he was a little bit better, but a little physically compromised. The next meeting with Baltimore is when he hurts his wrist. He didn't play either the Pittsburgh game. So in theory, you didn't even have a fully healthy Joe Burrow for any of the 5 AFC North matchups. So how much does that factor into the equation of those losses too?
Absolutely. And I mean, when Burrow went out, he threw a touchdown pass to put them ahead 5 minutes before halftime. So it's, again, they weren't going to go 5-0, 6-0 in the division this year. But I mean, if they can go 3-3 in the division every year, I mean, you see what they're doing to the rest of the NFL. They're 5-0 against the NFC, and they played some pretty good NFC teams. I mean, they pretty much ran over the 49ers, and outside of the Ravens, 49ers are killing everybody. I think the 49ers do not want to see any team from the AFC North ever again.
I'm with you.
I think
it's perfectly fine for the Bengals to run whatever system they want and not be like the AFC North, because we've seen for 30 years what happens when the Bengals try to be like the AFC North and it doesn't it doesn't work. So and I think we've all enjoyed the process of them being a different team. The only real difference is, I mean, if you're talking about this Bengals team being 3-3 in the AFC North, I mean, you're talking about an 11-4 football team, which is kind of what I would suggest we all kind of thought was going to happen.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you ever go 0-5, of course, people are going to, say, oh, that's not, you're not running the right scheme. Well, okay, thanks, pal. I mean, you're 0-5 in the division, of course. But I think if they're 3-3, I mean, we really are looking at an 11-4 team that's super solid. We're happy about where they're at. But if you're missing Joe Burrow for all this time, it doesn't matter if you're physical, not physical, wide open, power game. It doesn't matter what you are. You lose Joe Burrow, you're going to have problems.
Yeah, exactly. And like Cena said, I mean, they haven't had Burrow at full strength for any of these games. And this season has been a weird yo-yo. They've never put together a complete game, even with Burrow healthy, even after he did get healthy for this handful of games. And they still, even with a backup quarterback for the past 5 weeks and the next 2 weeks going forward, they're still on the precipice of making the playoffs. They went out and they're in. They've got a 96% chance, and ESPN has a cool playoff predictor where you just pick the matchups, pick the winners the next 2 weeks. And if the Bengals went out, there's only like a very small scenario, and I can't remember what it is. I think it's the Steelers have to win out, and a couple other things have to happen for the Bengals to miss the playoffs. So they, they're still in position. This could have been a weirdly special year if Burrow had even been around for the Steelers games.
Yeah, no question. No question about it. And you know, I think, again, when you point to this year and the faults of what this year, you know, when you write the postmortem of it, it's probably going to be more primarily pointing the finger. Obviously, the Burrow injury is one thing, pointing the finger at the defense and the, yeah. the step back it took this season. I think that's a bigger storyline than anything.
When it's wild when you think about all the problems you can just easily point to or think of off the top of your head, and you're still that close to greatness. I want to thank the Bengals, because anytime you lose your starting quarterback, I want to thank the Bengals. It's now the new year, and these games still matter, which is in my lifetime, you know, there's been a lot of years where you get to New Year, it don't matter. So I got to give, you know, the Bengals a lot of credit. I think you give the coaching staff a lot of credit to keep this all together and rolling in the right direction, and is very impressive when you think of all the problems, whether it's defense, injuries, offense at times, wide receiver room. I mean, you can go all over the board. The Bengals somehow are still right in the thick of it, which is highly impressive to me when you really look at it.
There have been plenty of years of me covering this team where I'm almost into mock draft season at this point, and I'm not. So that's a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, just as recently as 2019, I mean, at Halloween 2019, we're looking at, are the Bengals going to get Tua, or who, you know, this quarterback from LSU who's tearing things up? Is he going to be the number one overall pick for the Bengals? And yeah, I mean, maybe the Bengals don't. I mean, they've got a tough matchup that we'll get into here in a minute with the Chiefs, and maybe they don't make the playoffs, but it's at least interesting. It's like the Red season this past year. They didn't get where they needed to go, but at least those entertaining games down the stretch that meant something. So that's, and given the history of sports in Cincinnati, that's, if that's your concession, if that's your worst case, you've got a pretty good organization. And people like to just shit on Zach all the time for whatever reason, because anything bad that happens, it's the head coach's fault. They screwed up, bad play calling, bad draft, whatever. And whenever they perform well, it's because of the players. But Bengals have a good head coach, and they have a good system, and they have a good organization, which is weird to say. I mean, we've talked about going into the season how weird it feels to trust the Bengals organization. Of course, then they come out and play this, but I mean, it's the truth, though.
Yeah, and you know, when he was talking in those losing years, those first couple of years, about locker room culture and all that, that sounds really cute at the time, and it's like, I don't care about your culture, bro. Go win games. Right. But it did set a standard, I think, that they've kind of, once they've now rebuilt the roster with quality players, and I think it spoke really volumes on Sunday, or whatever day that was, Saturday. Guys don't have to do this. I mean, it was a tough loss. Jadeveon Wuzie wanted to talk to us. He wanted to point the finger of blame at himself. And we even said, hey, we appreciate you, you know, you wanting to talk. And he said, hey, man, standard doesn't change. The standard's the standard. The culture's the culture. No, that doesn't change. And I thought, you know, I've never thought this whole culture thing was BS, because I'm in that locker room. I've never, you know, maybe outsiders, oh, that's a bunch of crap. It's not. And it was no more so poignant to me than him handing there, pointing the finger of blame at himself, wanting to talk, wanting to take accountability. I think that's what he's built, and he's built that sustains through rough patches like they've had this year, and that's why they're still in the hunt, I think.
Well, and I think when you look at the Bengals, you know, going back to the, you know, the previous comment where, you know, the Bengals being 8-7 is incredible. I think this is the number one factor. I mean, clearly, to lose a quarterback, to lose some of the things that they've lost, and you're in the thick of it, you have to have the locker room. Because if you don't, this is a 4-11 team. I mean, no doubt about it, you're in real trouble. So the locker room atmosphere, I give full credit to Zach Taylor. But the thing it reminds me of is Dan Campbell in Detroit, where, you know, his opening press conference, he talked about he was going to do all these things, and all the guys on ESPN just lit him up for it. This guy's a clown. Well, now he's got that locker room, and you can see it. I think the Bengals are very similar in that aspect. Obviously, different-looking teams, but similar in that aspect that Zach Taylor does a great job keeping the locker room, and he really has created his own culture.
I think all you have to do is look at the guys that were here in 2018, Marvin's last year, or 2018 Marvin's last year, and guys that were still here in 2021, and there were only a few guys left. Yep. And those were guys that bought into the system. They were guys, I mean, Carlos Dunlap, that guy wasn't here. That guy, you know, that guy put a hell of a lot of great football, played a hell of a lot of great football for the Bengals, but he wanted no part of the organization. They got to matter. The old Bengals, they would keep him around and then just put clauses in his contract that he couldn't talk ill about them. So they absolutely just identified the right guys to just to create that culture that, you know, when stuff, you know, when shit hits the fan, when stuff gets, you know, when you face it's a controversy, rough times. Yeah, adversity. There we go. That's thank you, Thesaurus. I've struggled there. When you face adversity, like they're gonna be like they're gonna tough it out. You're gonna come through on the other side. So it's kudos to him and the organization and Duke Tobin. You can question them on some of the drafts that they've had in the past handful of years. I mean, 2021 draft, they have one player, two players if you count McPherson. They have two guys that have done anything in this league. Jack Carman, he's not gonna have a job next year. Deontay Smith is gonna be, you know, but they at least have the right guys at the, you know, running the team. So quickly here, we're gonna look forward this coming week. Bengals do play at Arrowhead. GEHA. What does GEHA stand for? I don't care.
I want to say it was an.
It's got to be a healthcare something.
An insurance or healthcare thing. Yeah, for workers, I think in that state. I looked it up the last time I was there because I call it Arrowhead. I don't call it GEHA, but that you see the thing. It's clearly marked as GEHA Field or whatever the heck. To me, it's always going to be Arrowhead.
Yeah, just don't call it.
It makes me think of Gillette razors. I don't know why, because I don't clearly. I mean, the Gillette's not working here, but. That's what it makes me think of. I don't know why.
Isn't that in Foxborough?
Yeah, I think so.
I think so. Anyway, Bengals play Kansas City Chiefs 425. They are 6.5-point underdogs. Big quick playoff. Look, yeah, they need to win out. They don't control their own destiny, but if they win out, it's more than likely the Bengals are going to be in. They can still get the sixth seed. If things go a certain way, depending on what happens with the Bills and the Dolphins down the stretch. Injury-wise, Jamar is questionable. He was limited practice last 2 days. Looks like he's on track, but he's still a game-time decision. What's the last thing that you've kind of heard about it, Skinny?
Yeah, the official injury report just came out, and he is officially listed as questionable. We talked to him yesterday. You know, I asked him, are you having any issues with range of motion or is it pain? Is it the possibility of contact? And he said, no, he goes, it bothers me a little bit, but my range of motion is pretty good. It's more of the contact element. And I honestly, the goofy part to me is I part of me thinks they're playing games here with the Chiefs a little bit, but also part of me thinks that it is a game time decision. But for him, how's he going to know until he gets in a game and gets hit what that pain level is going to be? That's why I asked him about the range of motion, because I get it. If you can't get range of motion, you can't play anyway. So. Yeah. If he thinks he's got range of motion and he's able to catch, and he, to your point, as you said, he's been limited, which means he's done some drill work, and I've watched him do some drill work. I think it will be him trying to give it a go, but who knows, whatever that first catch is, and he takes a whack to that shoulder, maybe he goes, I'm done. And listen, I this is going to sound wrong, and I don't mean it to be. Jamar is going to take care of Jamar, and that's not a knock. I mean, he, you know, remember early in the year, we all joked when he talked about, well, Joe should take 5 games. We'll see you in 5 weeks. I think he understands that, hey, these injury things are real, and I'm not going to mess it up further by trying to be the tough guy and grit it out. It's just not his MO. And again, I don't mean that to sound like he's soft, because he's not, but he's going to take care of himself. And I respect that. I can't tell you what a guy's pain tolerance is, nor should I. It's not my place to do that. So I know everybody else wants these guys to be tough guys and grit your teeth. Man, that stuff's real. And so I'm going to let him tell me if he can play or not.
I mean, look what he did last year in New Orleans after he fractured his hip.
Insane.
I mean, no, he's a tough guy. I mean, he fractured it that game and went off and had a huge game. And yeah, ended up having this a couple weeks after that. But yeah, he absolutely won the game. Like, no, he's a tough guy. Like, if he thinks he needs that week and it's, you know, it's not going to be in his best interest physically, and he doesn't think he's going to help the team, by all means, I get it.
Yeah, I completely agree. I fully trust Jamar. I mean, I think and this is the good part about this locker room and the Bengals culture is I trust these guys. And I think actually when you look at the Joe Burrow situation, I think we all would agree that we wish he would have taken the games, you know, would have taken the 5. I don't want Jamar out there if it's going to be something that could lead to a problem. I really do trust these players because of that culture, and they want to win. There's no question about it. These guys want to win badly, and I love them for it. So to me, I completely let him do what he needs to do. I want you long-term. I want you, you're a franchise guy, you know, make the right choices. And I think they have so far.
I do think him kind of running off a little bit of the mouth about the Chiefs secondary, gives you a little bit of a hint that he wants to play, that he's, yeah, if there's any doubt at all, he's going to be out there. So
that's what you don't want to duck and run from, man. If you open your mouth about it, you better go stand up for it, right?
Exactly. At least be there, you know, in uniform and play the first series. If it hurts and you got to come out, you got to come out, fine. But yeah, you're not going to run your mouth and be like, oh no, I'm, you know.
If you're going to talk about it, you better be about it.
Yeah.
Exactly. Cam Taylor-Britt designated to return this week. He should be good to go. Any reason to think that he's going to be anything? So he's like, no limitations at all. I mean, they said he looked like, in what he was doing, like he looked like he was ready a couple weeks ago if he could have.
Yeah, so at Zach's press conference, he said, we need to see him go out there and run around. Lou Anarumo told us the same thing on Wednesday when we talked to him. And so after practice, Cam came in and about five or six of us go up to him to ask him how it went. And I said, so when are you going to deem yourself ready? And he says, I look ready, don't I? I was out there running around, I'm ready. And I said, well, Zach said you need to run around. He goes, bro, I ran around, I'm ready. I thought, okay. And he deemed himself ready. As you saw the last couple of days, he was a full go. So I think that's all they needed to see, is just make sure there's nothing lingering, probably for him too, from a mental standpoint, make sure you know, there's no lingering situation from it. He even talked about, he thought he might've been able to come back last week. He couldn't, obviously, because of the IR rules and limitations because of that. But if he was feeling that good last week, another week on top of it. And it's a key. I mean, I does he travel with Rashee Rice? And if so, that shuts down their only legitimate receiving threat other than Travis Kelce.
Yeah. And going forward, looking at the Chiefs injury report, they got a lot of guys that are injured and banged up. I haven't seen has their injury report come out yet for the day? I know they're been hour behind.
When the Bengals send theirs out about 20 minutes later, they'll send both teams out. So it's kind of the Bengals send one and then the other team, I think because of the time difference, they're an hour behind. Yeah. I guess they get a little bit of a grace period there, but it probably won't be too much longer for those on the lookout for it.
Yeah. Quarterback Ladarius Sneed has been out all week with a calf injury. Isaiah Pacheco with a concussion in the shoulder. Did you see the game when he got, when he got the concussion?
I did.
Oh, I mean, man, get helmet yanked off for like the second time in two drives, I think.
Yeah.
And then his own lineman comes across and kneed him in the head, and he immediately grabbed his head. And then the poor guy goes to the sideline, goes to sit on the evaluation table, and the table collapses underneath him.
Like,
this isn't a Chris Jones, someone 300 pounds or, you know, a big 350 pound lineman. This is a, what, 200 pound running back that sits on the table and it just collapses. It's one of those signs. It's not your day when that happens. So,
right. To me, it was the perfect depiction of the Chiefs season. There's a table there, something you think is going to be sturdy, and you can guarantee when you set your food on it, it's going to hold it. And next thing you know, your food's on the floor. I mean, it was the perfect picture. And I've enjoyed the Chiefs losing. It's been amazing to watch.
I like Pacheco, so I feel bad for him. I think he's, like, at least the only good player to come out of Rutgers since Ray Rice. But I'm not sad to see that. It was kind of laughable. You feel bad that the guy's got a concussion. Okay, there we go. I forgot. I miss his mullet and that mustache. Man, that was glorious.
He was the best.
But it looked like one of the tables that Bills Mafia likes to slam guys through. But tackle Donovan Smith has been out with a neck injury, and Kadarius Toney with chronic butterfingers, a hip injury. Those guys have all not practiced all week long. Trey Smith with an ankle and a knee was limited all week. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who would be playing in Pacheco's absence, didn't play yesterday with an illness. He'll probably be okay because those have been running through everyone's locker room. I would assume that Snead, Pacheco, Smith, and Toney are all going to be out again this week. They haven't practiced up until this point.
I would, too. Yeah, to your point, I would, too. I mean, clearing concussion protocol, too, is usually you've got to have some small step of exercise ramped up into a bigger step. I mean, I don't even think he's taken that first step yet because he hasn't done anything.
Yeah. So, with Trey Smith, guard, who's a really good player, he's been limited all week. I mean, Bengals have a chance to face a limping Chiefs team in the standings and on the field. Now, that doesn't mean anything. Then they could go out and Mahomes could throw for 450 yards on them and throw into guys that look like the three of us on the field, and he'll still find ways to get them open. But I think Trey Henderson's got a huge, huge chance to feast this week, playing at least the backup at left tackle. So quick keys to the game on offense, they have to contain the turnovers. They cannot, Browning cannot throw the ball up three times. He had sacked by Watt and fumbled. He was able to recover it at least, but one interception, fine, but it can't be in the red zone. It can't be stupid, just kind of brainless interception. If someone makes a play and makes a hell of a play, Brian Cook had an interception against the Bengals last year. Yes, that just did. Absolutely made a fantastic play, just ripped it away. That happens, fine. But it can't be one where you're just throwing it up. Number two, you got to keep Chris Jones from wrecking your plans. The Bengals interior offensive line has been playing a lot better for the past month. They've been playing as well as they played all season. They need to keep it up. Chris Smith, absolutely. I mean, alone killed them last year.
Yeah, to that point, I mean, let's face it, Max Sharping was not signed to block Chris Jones. Alex Kappa was signed to block Chris Jones, and you didn't get a chance to see that in the playoffs. And Max did a great job in the Buffalo game. He was overmatched by Chris Jones, and that's what's supposed to happen. Chris Jones is an all-pro, and Max Sharping is a backup interior lineman. This is what you got Alex Kappa for, is guys like this. And you're right, Chris Jones cannot wreck this game because he's very capable of doing it.
Yeah. And last year they moved him around. Grant Bengals had three injuries on their offensive line, so they could line him up wherever he wanted to. But I mean, he'd lined up at edge a few times going against backup tackles. So he's going to get his. He's going to get a sack. He's going to get a lot of pressure. He cannot turn into Aaron Donald in the Super Bowl or what he did in the what Jones did in the AFC Championship game last year. And then they need to take advantage of a beat-up secondary. They're already missing Brian Cook from UC on IR. Jerry Sneed looks unlikely to go. They still have playmakers out there, but especially if Chase is going, the Bengals have a huge advantage. I mean, Browning hit 10 different receivers. He's going to spread the ball around and find guys. So this is one where if Browning gets time, I think the Bengals are at least going to be able to do business on offense. Really depends on just what happens on defense. Greg, you want to go over defense keys?
Yeah. My bad, I don't have it pulled up.
Killing me, Smalls.
I know. High class here. I got it. Go ahead, my bad.
All good?
Yeah, I'm trying to pull it up.
All right, well, I'll go over here, and then you can just you can pipe in here.
Yeah.
On defense, they need to give all of the attention to Pat Kelsey. Who's Pat Kelsey? That was the
basketball coach.
Basketball coach for Winthrop.
Yep.
Travis Kelsey, the other guy, went to that other school in Cincinnati. They held Pat Freiermuth to the catch list last week, which was amazing when you saw how much he feasted the first game. 23 routes, 0 targets. Travis Kelsey is better than Pat Freiermuth. I think that they need to double, triple team him. They have one other receiver that, you know, that can, I don't even know if you can count on Rashee Rice. I mean, he's still a rookie and he's done fairly well, but that, you know, he's not Tyreek Hill or anybody else out there.
Yeah, to your point on it is miraculous what they did with Pat Freiermuth last week, because the Bengals have given up more yards to tight ends than anybody in the NFL this year. It's well over 1,000. It might be 1,100-ish to this point. And they're actually on pace if Kelsey goes off and Njoku, if he plays next week, goes off to maybe give up the most of all time to tight ends. So, yeah, and to your point, I mean, Kelsey is the one guy you got to focus everything on.
And he hasn't had huge games against the Bengals in the past couple of years. So that's, you know, to their credit. Now they had, I don't want to say better safeties, more reliable safeties. I mean, I still believe in the talent of Dax Hill.
Yeah.
Jordan Battle's been fantastic, but yeah.
Agreed.
So
this is a bad Chiefs offense, and he's one. I don't even want to say bright spot. It's just, this is a bad Chiefs offense. At least the worst we've seen with Mahomes there. And Travis Kelsey's the one weapon or threat that you can really envision giving you problems. So we said the same thing last week about Pickens, and then you saw how that went. So hopefully this week, slow Kelsey down early. Don't let him get started fast, and then, you know, you can live to fight your battle.
Yeah. Second key, Trey Hendrickson needs to get to Patrick Mahomes. He's going to be going against the rookie Wanya Morris, not the same Wanya Morris who's in Boys the Men. I don't know if that guy wouldn't be able to contain Trey Hendrickson either, but we know what Mahomes can do when he gets out of the pocket. This leads into my third key, is pass rush discipline. Part of it is getting him on the ground. The other part is you need to stay disciplined. You can't. Yeah, exactly. Keep him in the pocket, because we see what happens. I mean, this happens every game. This happens his entire career. He's not Lamar Jackson when he gets out of the pocket. He's got his eyes downfield, and he's going to throw the ball from some weird angle, sidearm, underarm, backwards flip, whatever. He's going to find plays that shouldn't be there, that he's amazingly able to find guys there. So it's again, more than just getting to him, it's keeping him in the pocket, keeping him frustrated. I mean, we look at the masterclass that Bengals defense did to him 2 years ago in the AFC Championship game when they, you know, they drop eight and he's running around and he's got nowhere to throw and he can't escape the pocket. He can't run because they've got guys covered in the flats and everything to keep him from running downfield. Names have changed. Bengals pass rush hasn't been as good, but to be able to keep them in check. And again, this is not a very good Chiefs offense, but it's bad Bengals defense.
Yeah, and to your point, I think the other thing is he's actually held onto the ball longer this year than he has at any time of his career, which suggests offensive line's doing some things. But also suggests to me that part of it is because he also still scrambles. We saw it in the game last week with the Raiders. I think he had 9 passes outside the pocket where he scrambled but didn't have a lot of success. That suggests to me that he's getting the time, but he's got receivers who aren't getting any separation. And then he's having to create some things with his feet. So, yeah, you're right. If you don't allow him to do those things where – then suddenly, you know, maybe you don't plaster a receiver and they do an unscripted thing that, you know, you did everything on script right, except for keeping him contained. If you can keep that part of it, I don't think he has receivers good enough to get constant separation in this game.
Well, this is how you know the Chiefs' weapons are not good, because you talk about more time. Are you kidding me? If you give somebody 6 seconds and you can't get open, I mean, that's a long time, you know, a long time. The other part of it is don't let Mahomes out of the pocket, because if you do, Tony Romo's going to go nuts for 45 minutes. I mean, please, for the love that is all football, do not let him get out of the pocket and make a play, because you'll hear about it for a decade.
Tony Romo loves him some Pat Mahomes, and he goes hardcore on any – I mean, maybe not as much as Mahomes, but I mean, he goes in a lot on Burrow. He goes in a lot on Allen. Obviously, we're going to notice it, you know, and kind of bitch about it when it's against, you know, another guy who does not lack for doesn't lack for attention. But I mean, Mahomes has 14 interceptions this year. Highest he's had, I think highest he's had in his career this far.
It is.
And it's
14 was the highest prior. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're seeing this just the last few weeks, as you know, as they've struggled, the frustration level, and they've lost 4 out of the last 6 games. I've never seen him as frustrated. I mean, we all talk about like him, the crying that they did after, the Buffalo game.
Yeah.
Absolutely, just losing his mind over the penalty. Like, it's a penalty, dude. They have to call it. I'm sorry. What happens afterwards doesn't matter. Or
it's clear.
Take back the pick six. Bring back the pick six that Jermaine Pratt had the next week when Trey Hendrickson was in the neutral zone. You can tell that, like, he's, I don't want to say mentally not there. That's not the right word, but he's going to throw the ball up for grabs because he's getting pissed off. Like, he was absolutely just screaming at his offensive line last week. Now, Bengals don't have the pass rush that the Raiders do. The Raiders have some dudes. I mean, everyone knows Max Crosby, but they were bringing everybody was getting in, and that tells you the state of their offensive, the Chiefs' offensive line. But I think if they can put hits on him, if Trey Hendrickson can get in there, if B.J. Hill can get in there and hit him, you know, often in the first quarter, he's going to get frustrated. He's going to start making mistakes, and he's going to start doing hero ball. I mean, that's the stuff that happens to Josh Allen. That's when he starts coming apart, is when he feels the need to have to play hero ball.
Yeah, and I think that frustration, I mean, things have come so easy for him, and he's great. I mean, his arm talent is ridiculous. It's scary, but he's ridiculous, no question about it. But when things don't come as easy and you aren't having receivers get open on time and you can't play on time, there's the frustration. And I think, you know, don't let him get in rhythm. Don't let him get to playing on time. Limit those unscripted plays. I think it's a formula to maybe go out there and pull off the win.
Well, yeah. And I thought when you looked at the Raiders it, in the game, when you watched that game, when it came to the real game, when you get to the fourth quarter and now, you know, all your special plays are out of the book, and now we're getting to the nuts and bolts of what these two teams were going to do. The Raiders brought the house and just continued to bring the house and played man on the back end and said, have your skill guys beat us.
And they couldn't.
Chiefs failed miserably. I think if the Bengals play this correctly, when it gets to it, of course, you know, early you're going to mix things in. When it gets late, I think that's got to be the formula, and you've got to be able to hold up on the back end for however long it takes to get to Mahomes.
Yeah, absolutely. Predictions for Sunday's game, Greg?
I'm going to take the Bengals in a close one. I'm thinking 24-21. I think it'll be somewhat low scoring. Don't expect a ton of offense, but I think both teams will find ways to get in the end zone a few times. So I'll take Bengals 24-21.
Skinny.
I think on my podcast this week, and when I put it in print later today, I had Chiefs 23-20. I mean, all these teams do is play field goal games against each other. And maybe, unfortunately, the way that last season ended was on a Harrison Butker field goal in overtime, and maybe this one ends on a Harrison Butker field goal in regulation. I don't think a win is out of the question. Again, if you were starting a year going down the list like we all do, like that's a win, that's a win, that's a loss, that's a win, that's a win. This was clearly circled in red as a loss. It feels even more winnable today, even without Joe Burrow, than it did when the season started. So yeah, them going out there and winning, they know how to do it. They've done it before. This group has done it before. But it feels like that's kind of the way this season is going to put itself out of its misery, if you will, with a Butker field goal to win
that,
it.
That really is wild that when you looked at the Bengals schedule, if there's one game you would have picked out of all of them, you're guaranteeing this is the one. You gotta be right on the prediction. This is the one you'd have picked. I mean, it is wild that it's more winnable now, and Joe Burrow is, you know, in nowhere near suiting up.
Right.
Yeah. I have to be Debbie Downer here. I've got the Chiefs 27-21. I think Brownie's going to be able to put up some yards, and they're playing with some backups. Interior offensive line is playing a lot better. So Chris Jones, just like I said, he's going to get his, but I don't think it's going to be as much of a track meet as he had last time they played in the AFC Championship game. I just think he's going to throw a backbreaking pick in the fourth quarter. They're going to frustrate Mahomes, but I think he's going to bounce back, play a little bit, you know, play better than he did against the Raiders, do some Mahomes shit to extend plays and find Kelce or Rashee Rice. I'm happy to be wrong. I think the few times I've picked against the Bengals, they have won. So maybe I'm trying to reverse jinx ourselves here, but I will be happy as hell again. If they go into Cleveland in a winner in playoffs situation next week, and they're going to be playing Cleveland's backups, I'm going to be happy as hell. I think the Bengals are, you know, I can't guarantee a win, but if they can pull it out, I mean, that's fantastic. I just, going off of my head, not my heart, I don't think they get it done. They're playing it. It's going to be loud there. We know how loud Arrowhead gets. It's a rivalry game with the Bengals now, so the crowd's going to be well lubed up by game time. So,
and Kansas City's not an easy place to play. I mean, that is one of the better, I would say, better places to see a football game.
It's loud. How do you compare it, Skinny, like to any other place? Like
it's up there. Pittsburgh, when things are going well, like I said, that crowd last week, you know, we all wait for the fourth quarter when they're winning and they play Renegade and they wave the towels. The place goes crazy nuts. It's clearly up there. Baltimore, again, I think it's because the divisional foes, you get that. But, yeah, Arrowhead can get up there on the decimal meter for sure.
Are you a Sticks fan?
I am.
There's a lot of great classic rock out there, and Styx has some pretty good songs, but Renegade's
not one of them.
Renegade is your hype song.
Skinner, you had to say something. I knew where this was going. I knew where this was going. As soon as you mentioned it, I was like, oh no.
I'm not a Kiss fan, so I'm not going to, you know, say they should play, you know, a Kiss song or something. I think they're the most over, but I mean, I don't know. It's Mr. Roboto is a better Styx song.
Wow. Wow. Don't worry, gato, Mr. Roboto.
All right. That's probably a good place to put a pin in it for this week. Guys, any final thoughts? Can I let you go for any final thoughts before we get out of here?
Yeah, I'm with you. I this win is not out of the question. And you know, my fear is this feels like the Steelers scenario where things are going haywire for the Chiefs and this was their get right game. And I if that's the case, then you know, so be it. But I think they win this. They do get the playoffs. I think they do beat Cleveland, backups or no backups. And so this is the seminal moment for this football team.
I think regardless of what happens with the Bengals against the Chiefs, I think the one thing I want to say is that this Bengals team deserves a ton of credit. I mean, when you've been met with so many obstacles and they haven't hurdled them all, but when they miss an obstacle, they don't shy from the next one. And I think this team has shown a lot of heart. It has not been an easy season. And, you know, as a fan, I just I can appreciate an 8-7 season that really they had to work their tails off for. And I give a lot of credit to the Bengals, and I think this is just another step in the right direction, even though a lot of people might not feel like it is.
Yeah, and talking about how last week was Steelers back against the wall, this week might be the Chiefs. This week is also the Bengals back against the wall, too. So, and they've played well with their back against the wall. With them, I didn't pick them to win, but, it wouldn't be incomprehensible if they do win. If Browning can avoid making a killer mistake, fine. Make them earn every point that they get. Don't give him short fields. Brad Robbins needs to have a good game. I think he kicked pretty well last week, all things considered. But all in all, he's been... We'll be polite, because we have a guest. We'll be polite and say he's been rough this year. Mm-hmm. So it'll be nice to see him kind of finish up the year strong when they do have to back. It'd be nice if they never have to punt, but it'd be too optimistic. So, Skinny, that's I really appreciate
good.
You.
I like that game plan.
No yeah, punt. Exactly.
Good game plan.
Skinny, I really appreciate you coming on here and spending a lot of your
enjoyed it.
So hopefully have to do this again sometime. Greg, everyone else, have a wonderful Happy New Year. Stay safe out there. Don't do anything dumb. Hoo day, go Bengals and all that fun crap. We'll see you guys.